You're listening to Ask the CIO, brought to you by CenturyLink. Now, here is your host, Jason Miller.
We're bringing you a special edition of Ask the CIO this week. We're talking about TechStat as part of my special report on how the review process has impacted federal IT. My guests today are Mike Wash, the National Archives and Records Administration's Chief Information Officer, and Scott Stovall, the Director of the Electronic Records Archive Program.
The Electronic Records Archive Program was probably one of the first programs to go through a TechStat session. I know that you were not there during that TechStat, but if you can just kind of maybe give me the 50,000-foot view about why NARA decided to put the ERA program through TechStat, and maybe what were some of the challenges that NARA was facing, and then give me a sense of where we're at now.
The Electronic Records Archives program was the largest IT investment for the National Archives and had been underway for a number of years. And in the 2010 timeframe, it was clear that progress was not being made at a rate that was really acceptable. And it looked as if some sort of redirection or course change was going to be required in order to have a successful conclusion to the program. And the TechStat process came along, and it was a perfect opportunity to really run this program through the TechStat process with the intent of really doing a bit of what we call here a deep dive into the program to understand where we are against the expected business outcomes for the system, where we were on our spend rate, and where we were on schedule. And we knew going into it that the expenditure was exceeding what we had expected and the schedule was running behind. So warning flags were flying, so the TechStat process was really used to help better define where the problem areas were and what we would want to do to try to do course corrections to get it back on a successful path.
Do you have a sense of how bad things were? I mean, were things 20% off schedule, 20% over spend rate or more? Or was it more of a NARA knew things were heading down a bad direction and you want to put a stop to it before they got too far, of course?
I think it's more the latter. I certainly don't know how the actuals were against the plan. But I do understand coming into the agency that there was growing frustration on the lack of progress on the program. So that lack of frustration may have been one of the key drivers. And, you know, also recognize that there was a new archivist that had come on about a year prior to that. So the archivist was also anxious to make sure that this program was going to move in a direction for successful conclusion. So a number of factors.
Okay, so let's flash forward 2 years now. Where are we with ERA? I don't know if Mike, you want to start and then pass it to Scott?
From a ERA perspective, last September, actually at the end of September of 2011, we completed the development activities on the core system of ERA. And really moved into an operations and maintenance mode for the system. We also went through a recompete of the support contract, and Scott can certainly talk more in detail about the approach that we're taking with that. So the current situation with ERA is that it's in operation. It's being used by federal agencies, and we track that very closely for the number of agencies that are using it and how they're using it. Training continues for agencies to be able to engage with and use the system. And we are on a path of actually looking at where adaptations or changes may need to be made to the system to continue to position it for best use within the agencies. And, you know, the other aspect, and Scott can also speak to this as well, is that the system is actually coming up for some refresh of technology because it's been around for a while, and that's a part of our ongoing operations and maintenance.
Jason, this is Scott. We've transitioned to an O&M contractor, and that contractor is responsible for maintaining all of the ERA instances or the ERA system. That contract has been in place since, I think it was January of 2012. We initially intended to award in October, and there were some contract issues, and they were resolved in January, and I think at the end of January, the IBM staff assumed the operational responsibility for ERA. That's been going well. We've gotten positive feedback from users. There's been from the standpoint of help desk support, there's been very positive feedback for the new support staff. So we've been very pleased with the operations and maintenance support that IBM's been providing. And as Mike said, we're looking to do a technology refresh. We have some equipment that is reaching end of life, some hardware and software. In the spirit of data center consolidation, we're looking at virtualization, and we're looking at other ways to make that data center more efficient. And we're also looking at moving some of the instances to the cloud where that makes sense. So there's an ongoing activity with IBM to move our development and test instances, for example, into cloud computing. So that's, you know, at a very high level where we are with the IBM O&M contract.
Can you give me a sense how many agencies are using it and what are they using it for? I know records, but is there a specific type of records?
Jason, this is Mike. Let me take that one. All of the CIO council agencies are using the system now. So the way that the launch activities were really staged over the years was we were targeting the large department agencies to make sure that they got into the operational aspects of the system, and then some of the mid-sized and smaller agencies are coming along. So the total number, I don't have that right at the tip of my fingers here, but all of the major agencies and departments are currently using it, and a number of the smaller and mid-sized agencies are using it. And by the end of this fiscal year, all agencies are going to be using ERA. That's one of the expected outcomes of this first year of O&M, is to get all agencies up and running.
And from a record standpoint, is it all records? Is it a specific type of records?
It's a number of things. It's the actual schedule. So the record schedules that are created by agencies are created as a part of ERA. And then the electronic records themselves, when those records become available based on the schedule, are ingested or submitted into ERA. And that actually takes a couple of different paths. There's the path of agencies directly putting their records in. And then there's also the path where NARA and NARA archivist staff helps with the actual submission of the records into the system. So we're supporting both of those.
And just to be clear, when you say the record schedule, that leads me to believe it's some kind of list of when the certain records will go to NARA. Is that as basic as it is?
I think that's a good way to look at it, Jason. It's the schedule for what a records officer within an agency creates that determines which records and at what time they will actually be accessioned into the National Archives, where the ownership of those records moves to the National Archives and then into our electronic records archive system.
We have to take a break. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guests today are Mike Wash, the National Archives and Records Administration's Chief Information Officer, and Scott Stovall, the Director of the Electronic Records Archive Program. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guests today are Mike Wash, the National Archives and Records Administration's CIO, and Scott Stovall, the Director of the Electronic Records Archive Program. From your perspective, ERA is successful. It's working. It's doing what NARA had hoped it would do from the beginning, at least to a certain extent.
This is Scott. We are in our O&M phase, so we have passed through development, and ERA is functioning as it was designed and as it was intended.
So that means that whatever the issues were back when in 2010 have been resolved. So give me a sense of some of those outstanding TxDAT issues that have been resolved or still need to be resolved.
This is Mike. There was a couple interesting TxDAT action items that came out, and some of them were in the spirit of developing good tracking metrics to ensure that progress was being made. So after the TxDAT, one of the actions that came out was that on a quarterly basis, the archives was expected to accept a certain quantity of records on a quarterly basis and move that into the electronic records archives system. So it was a way of demonstrating that the system was actually being used, and that was good. So on a quarterly basis, we report out the number of terabytes that were actually moving into the system, and throughout the last year of the development phase where it was in early stage operations, we met all of the quarterly goals for moving content into the system. So that was one of the tech stat actions.
And Mike, let me just interrupt real quick from a terabyte standpoint. Can you give me a sense of, are we talking about 2 or 3 terabytes, 10 terabytes, 100 terabytes?
It was 10 terabytes per quarter was the goal, and we met or exceeded that every quarter. And in a grand scheme of things, as you know, 10 terabytes in today's world is not a lot of data, but it was certainly a substantial amount of data to show that the system was indeed working and accepting data. The other action that was stated to be closed to have a successful conclusion of TechStat was the agency adoption, and that's what we had just recently talked about, and it was getting all of the top departments within the federal government trained and utilizing ERA, and that was completed a couple of months ago. So one of the last of the large departments completed their training and utilization. We were able to close that final tech stat action.
Things obviously progressing. It's being used. The system seems to be, as you said, in the O&M stage, so it's in a good footing, i.e. people are using it. Can you give me a sense of how much change TechStat played a role in making sure that the program was going in the right direction? Would the program have already gotten there without TechStat, and TechStat just was a nice little push? Or did TechStat play, maybe, can you tell if it played a bigger role? Again, knowing that you weren't there during the specific session, but when you got to NARA, ERA was not complete yet, so there's some reverberations, I guess, that still existed from TechStat.
This is Mike, and let me answer from the perspective that I had coming in as, you know, the system was in the final stages of the development and closing out TechStat actions. And then I think it would be good for Scott to talk about how we're doing things differently from a program perspective that I think are reflective of some of the key lessons learned and learnings from the earlier development cycles and the TechStat process. So whether or not the archives could achieve the desired outcome of ERA without TechStat, it's hard to say. In my opinion, we wouldn't have achieved it on the schedule that was established at TechStat if we hadn't done TechStat. And the primary reason is that what TechStat did was effectively expose what the current situation was within the program and establish hard dates and also metrics to demonstrate progress toward meeting the dates. So the exposure was progress wasn't being made at a sufficient rate. That was the assumption, but the TechStat validated that. The hard date was complete development and move to O&M by the end of the fiscal year, so the stake was pushed into the ground. And then the metrics were established of content ingested and agency adoption to demonstrate tracking toward, you know, a successful completion. So without doing those things, which is the result of the TechStat, we would have gotten done, but I think it would have taken longer, and we wouldn't have been able to have completed it certainly by the end of the fiscal 11 timeframe. So the benefit of TechStat, I think, is real, and particularly in our situation. And I think regardless of the size of the program, where ERA for us was a large program, that type of program discipline of setting realistic goals that are very clearly defined and having tracking metrics to help you see whether or not you're really progressing accordingly is a good practice and something that I think every project should really go through. And it's something that we have adopted here on all of our portfolio projects of doing that type of thing. But also from a lessons learned, this is where I'll lateral it off to Scott, we're managing the program in a much different way now than we did in the early days of ERA. And some of the approach is really coming from the learnings of TechStat, of how you modularize the types of tasks into maybe smaller tasks that are very clearly defined, et cetera. But I'll turn it over to Scott, and he can talk to you specifically about how the current contract is structured and how we're really progressing on moving ERA forward.
This is Scott. As Mike said, some of the lessons that were learned out of TechStat is to create smaller and more defined work packages for our vendor in the event that we need to do corrections and adaptations. While development ended and the system is functioning as designed, market needs change, and you need to adapt to those market needs, or we find small bugs or problems in the system that need to be corrected. The O&M contract gives us a vehicle called a technical direction letter, where we can work with our users and our stakeholders to identify these corrections and adaptations to the system, and we can create a small, clearly defined, kind of date-bounded package, which we call a TDL or a technical direction letter, and we issue that to the vendor, and the vendor then quotes back a firm fixed-price contract associated with that work activity. So we're able to move forward and adapt and correct the system by narrowly and clearly defining the scope and bounding it into a short, manageable delivery schedule, and then fixing the cost so that it's easier and more manageable and cleaner from the government standpoint. And we give that package to IBM, and they go off and they do the corrections and the adaptations to meet whatever, you know, our stakeholders are telling us they need the system to adapt to.
So, Scott, let me ask, how many times have you were able to use this technical direction letter? Have you used it a few times over the last year?
We've used it twice where we've issued a TDL to IBM, and IBM is working towards the TDL. They haven't completed an activity yet. Part of it is because of the delay, the contracting delay that we experienced. We have an expectation in just a few days of getting the first TDL back from IBM, the results of it, and going into testing. And then we have another TDL, which is an analysis TDL, that's due at the end of September. So we have two that have been issued. We have one that we're working through with IBM, some refinements to the content, and we have another one that has been given to IBM for them to quote back. And there are quite a few more that are teeing up behind it, but those are the ones that have been issued.
I know you haven't had the results yet, but do you feel like that this process is working better than the more typical, let me throw a task order against four or five different contractors and do it maybe that way?
I think it's a little too early to tell, but we believe that it's going to work. We feel that, again, based on our experience with the IBM as the O&M contractor, they understand the system. They understand it more every day. And issuing these task orders gives us the opportunity to leverage that knowledge, even though it's a fixed price contract for the O&M, and they have staff that are dedicated. They certainly have the reach back into that staff. Now, that being said, we aren't obligated to use the TDL process in the contract. If we find that from a cost perspective or from a performance perspective, the TDL's process isn't working, we could go out and we could take another approach where we could invite other vendors in or create other contract vehicles to support these corrections and adaptations. Right now, we're going down the TDL path, but we aren't wedded to that path. If it works, great. If we need to adapt, we can.
This is much different than the path that NARA was taking with the development of ERA. And did TechStat lead you down this path to this idea of a TDL?
I can't speak to that. I can say that where I think the differences are is that before we had an integrator, and the integrator was given wide latitude to run the program how they saw fit. And now we're more in control of the activities and more in control, working more directly with subject matter experts in industry. And there's that layer that's now been stripped away. So with a TDL, we're not turning it over to IBM and saying, you propose back the solution you think works. What we're saying is, here are the discrete activities that you must do and perform to deliver the results that we want. The key to that, though, is making sure you understand the requirements and defining it narrowly enough that we can deliver, the requirements and that IBM can deliver. We're trying not to overwhelm them by saying, deliver this vast system, we're saying, here are some corrections that would make our users very happy. So please correct and adapt this component or this function of ERA.
We have to take a break. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guests today are Mike Wash, the National Archives and Records Administration's Chief Information Officer, and Scott Stovall, the Director of the Electronic Records Archive Program. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guests today are Mike Wash, the National Archives and Records Administration's CIO, and Scott Stovall, the Director of the Electronic Records Archive Program.
Mike, let me switch to you for a second. Let me ask you to look more broadly around NARA and the TxDAT process. You probably have applied at least some of the principles of TxDAT, if not the actual TxDAT, to other programs. What kind of reaction do you get when you as the CIO decide, okay, this program needs to go through this process? What kind of reaction do you get from across the agency?
One of the things that Scott and I are bringing to NARA is, think more discipline in project management overall and portfolio management. Using an SDLC type of approach with fairly well-defined deliverables and expectations for the various phases of projects. And then that's extending into a regular type of review session for all of our portfolio systems so that we can, you know, keep track of where they are against what their expected schedules and costs and deliverables are. So that's a change here at the National Archives from what it was just a few years ago. The TxDAT process like this has been used in a couple of occasions here, a number of occasions actually. But in order for it to really work effectively, you kind of really need to know where a project is, you know, in its schedule and cost and feature delivery, so that if you start to sense that it's getting in trouble or, you know, slipping or going into the weeds, you can call a special review like a TxDAT and say, now we're going to do a deep dive and kind of really do a very detailed examination of this particular project. It could be a small project, could be a large project, and help to figure out what is the problem here. Is it the technology really wasn't ready? Is it that the resources aren't appropriate or available to do the job that needs to be done? Are there contracting issues? There's always a number of things that could start to emerge when you do this detailed analysis. And the effect of it so far here at the archives for the times that we've used it has been very effective. We've been able to, I think, in a timely manner, identify when a project needs to go through that detailed review. And in every case so far, we've been able to bring it back so that it's maybe not on the exact schedule, but at least back on a path that is going to deliver the desired features in a time frame that's understood and a cost that's within our capability to support. So that's a really good success story. So, but then to your question, how is it received when you pull the flag and say, okay, TxDAT? Generally, it's received as like, oh no, here we go, something's wrong, which is, I think, a very natural reaction, but it's not like, you know, taking the team to the woodshed. It's like, let's just talk about it. Let's figure out where the issues are and then work together to figure out how we can get them resolved. If from the CIO's perspective, there's more resources that need to be applied and they can be identified, you apply them. If it's a different way of approaching the project, like maybe doing a hosted solution rather than a build solution, let's investigate that. I view them more as it's an enhanced communication session to really get into the project to figure out what it is, where it is, what the options are, and explore a solution together. And by the end of the meetings, usually it's a really good situation and people feel good about it.
What's the difference if TxDAT wasn't there? I mean, Mike, you've been around long enough before TxDAT when you're at GPO or when you're at some other agencies. Without TxDAT, what happens?
Without that, I think it's pretty well established that progress isn't made as quickly as it could have been, or as efficiently or effectively. There's a school of thought that still is pretty common, that things should be allowed to proceed in kind of a skunk works type of fashion of just we'll develop it as we go and we'll know when we're done when we get there. It's an unstructured, iterative design approach that eventually results in a solution that you feel comfortable with. But in retrospect, looking at it, it probably took longer to do it that way and ultimately had more resource cost, whether dollars or people, in order to arrive at a desired outcome. What TechStat is doing is really driving in the principles that you should know what you want up front. You should have a plan for it. You should have an estimated, a good, you know, government speak, independent government cost estimate for what it's going to take to accomplish it, and have an execution plan that could be tracked well accordingly. And when any of those tracking metrics start to go awry, you evaluate it.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. We've been talking about TechStat as part of my special report on how the review process has impacted federal IT. My guests today were Mike Wash, the National Archives and Records Administration's Chief Information Officer, and Scott Stovall, the Director of the Electronic Records Archive Program.
Thank you for listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The show has been sponsored by CenturyLink. If you missed any portion of this broadcast, you can hear the show in its entirety on demand or podcast on federalnewsradio.com.